You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora koutou katoa, e whakarongo ana koutou ki te reo irirangi pōho, nau mai haere mai ki te hōtaka parakuahi. Welcome along to the 95BFM Breakfast Show. We've got a very special interview to play for you now. I spoke to Wise Blood, aka Natalie Meuring, on Tuesday of this week about her wonderful album Titanic Rising that came out in April of last year via Sub Pop Records. And we also spoke about her upcoming gig alongside Aldous Harding and Purple Pilgrims, which is happening as part of the Auckland Arts Festival in March, which is going to be a very special night indeed. She was really interesting. She touched on a whole lot of different things: climate change, activism, film, and a few other things which I'll leave for the interview. Right now, let's listen to Movies, and then we're going to come back and hear our conversation.
Thank you.
This is Wise Blood with Movies from the phenomenal album Titanic Rising. That was one of my favourite records of 2019. And I was very lucky to be able to chat to Natalie Meering, aka Wise Blood, on Tuesday. And we're going to have a listen to that conversation right now. Can we start by talking a little bit about the title, Titanic Rising? Is this a homage to the James Cameron classic?
You know, there is a little bit of an homage to the film, because there is a track on the album called Movies, and there is a very big movie about Titanic, but it is more about the idea of, like, this Titanic, larger-than-life rising of sea levels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Our lack of dominion over nature repeating itself.
I was really struck by that. Maybe listening the first time through the record, I was sort of swept away in the kind of cinematic elements of it. And then the second time I was listening more closely to what you were actually saying, and I was like, wow, this is really quite political. Do you see your writing and your music as a kind of activism?
You know, it is. It's unfortunately like might function within an echo chamber a little bit, because I do have fans that, you know, are Trump supporters or, you know, don't believe in climate change, and they still like my music, but I don't think I changed their political opinions. It's hard to say, you know?
It must be really interesting to live in an age as a musician where you can immediately see the response from your fans online. Do you ever find this as, like, overwhelming or kind of a contradiction to what you're trying to do?
Yeah, no, I'm generally overwhelmed by the internet. I have to really limit what I allow myself to read. I mean, YouTube comments are off limits. I think that's where people go to literally spread their vile vitriol.
Mm.
Like 14-year-olds just saying the meanest stuff in the world. It's a real bully zone. But, you know, Twitter, I read some Twitter, I read a little Instagram, and I try to keep sane. But, yeah, I think it's really difficult to... Yeah, like, really put everything into perspective. Like, some people that do have an opinion and want to say something, they might be like a 12-year-old in the middle of nowhere. And you can't really take it personally. And then, yeah, if there's a lot of people saying good things, then it's great to see it all, kind of feel that rush. So it's really, it's treacherous territory, but I try to navigate it in a way that keeps me feeling positive and grateful, you know?
I was really struck by the kind of overarching idea of hope. Maybe that is something to do with the cinematic nature of the album in many ways, but I think it is in the way that you write about some of these insurmountable or seemingly insurmountable problems like climate change. Do you feel hopeful about the state of the world? I mean, it is a bit bleak.
It's bleak, you know, but I do still have hope. That's my modus operandi. Even if it's hope for us to be able, you know, like, even if the shit really does hit the fan, you know, there will still be hope that we can enjoy our existence, whatever, you know, form it may take. So I think hope is never something that can completely disappear. And I choose to kind of focus on the elasticity of the human experience, that even if it's not what we expect and things get worse than we expect or things get better than we expect, we're still capable of appreciating existence. And I think we live in a post-capitalist, post-modern world, and we're kind of shifting paradigms, you know, technology, and it's really going to take on a completely different look in the future. And who are we to say that life is less worth living, you know?
I am really intrigued by the central theme of movies in this album. Obviously, you have a track called Movies that is quite earnest in its love for film, or maybe its involvement in the film world, but there is a complicated relationship going on there as well. I've seen you criticise that kind of nostalgia people have for old films, especially because they're just laden with, you know, transparent sexism and racism. What was it that made you sort of touch on the idea of film as this central element to this album?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, my generation was one of the more cinematically saturated generations of all time. Like, we grew up with videos.
Mm.
I mean, now you could argue that people can stream things, but when you put a video in, you don't stop it and start something else. You know, you watch the whole video. So I feel like there's something about that format in movies that in the 90s, it kind of really reached this fever pitch. And as a little girl growing up with Spielberg and George Lucas, like all the stuff that they're now basically rehashing in a way worse way and trying to sell back to people. You know, as somebody who's 31 years old, that was kind of like my childhood.
Mm.
So a lot of very informative experiences about society and reality came through movies. And I like to make a comparison that there are modern day myths, but being in modern times with capitalism and certain things, they don't really take the same potency that an ancient myth might have had, you know, where it's like the story that evolves and is passed down, you know, through oral, like orator traditions, you know. Movies are like basically a hustle. And the movie industry is a palace of sin that was raised, you know, was birthed from people really looking to just make a profit, you know.
Mm.
So in some ways, movies are, you know, kind of useless, yet we still spend so much time watching them. And I think the real clincher for me was Titanic being one of the biggest movies of all time.
Mm.
And, you know, such a relatable story, it didn't really shift anything politically, and people never really took home the message of, oh, the hubris of man, or, oh, we lack dominion over nature, and these industrial white men have been abusing, you know, their powers. People just kind of took home the Leo and the Kate and the entertainment value. So, in some ways, they're, like, extremely influential and extremely uninfluential. You know what I mean?
I do. I totally know what you mean.
I don't know how many movies we need to make about the bees. We've anthropomorphized all the endangered creatures, but it's just still not enough.
Is this what Wild Time is touching on a bit, the track on your record?
Definitely. Well, in some ways, we, you know, the sprawl, the industrial sprawl, comes from our nature. So in some ways, it is still a reflection of nature, even though it's kind of been... it's kind of become an artificial, you know, it's almost like humans are kind of this virus on the planet, kind of, you know, playing out their natural tendency.
We're listening to Wise Blood. This track is Wild Time, which she was just touching on there, and we'll be hearing the rest of the interview in just a couple of minutes.
Look around, there's nothing left to keep. By the bottles that broke you from the solace you seek.
Something you said a little bit earlier about, you know, teenagers in the comments on YouTube being kind of the meanest, but also teenagers are kind of amazing as well. They're like the crux that's driving this whole climate movement right now. I've seen you write about Greta Thunberg and how you really admire her. What is it about this young generation coming up at the moment that inspires you?
I think that they kind of maybe aren't as oppressed by the boomers. Mm-hmm. You know, like growing up in the 90s, it's basically like the boomer's foot was in my face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's just, it's all that kind of rehashment. It's just similar for the Gen X. Like, I feel like the Gen X generation was manufactured in some ways, not the whole generation, but the mainstream Gen X things that we associate with were manufactured by baby boomers to fool Gen X into thinking that they had their own rebellion. But in a lot of ways, I've seen that generation kind of suffer and the boomers kind of live on as like a legend or something. So I feel like the Gen Zs aren't as oppressed by that kind of dichotomy, and in some ways they have a different value system. So I think yeah, there's a lot of hope for them, and the fact that they aren't completely burnt out from having to hop on to this freelance economy for most people that doesn't really make sense. Like, a lot of millennials are pretty burnt out trying to just make ends meet and pay student loans. In America, you know, it's hard for me to speak for the rest of the world, and I have to admit that I have a tendency to speak from a skewed perspective as an American, but I do feel like the Gen Z have energy enough to do something about it because they're not really being launched into the workforce yet. And that's a part of the reason why they feel impassioned, and a part of the reason why I think my generation slept on it. Well, I mean, Occupy.
Yeah, something totally.
That we did. But I think a part of it is most people are living in a tedium of email and whatever form of work or hustle they're doing, trying to keep up with a society that's kind of setting people up to lose, ultimately.
I'm also really interested
in... That makes sense. I put a lot of things in there, but... Yeah.
No, I think that totally makes sense, and I think rings true as well for the different like methods of engagement with activism or with just issues in general. It's even things like the language that you use on the internet and the way you use the internet as a tool, for example, is so generationally different. And I think I'm on the cusp of the Gen Z thing, and I still feel like a, you know, million miles away from some of the ways in which activism is happening through that, and I find it really fascinating, and especially the way it kind of comes out through music and art as well. Do you think that art can be a useful method for activism?
Sometimes it's difficult because I feel like it is good to put the message out there, but we might be a little bit past the raising awareness phase. I think everybody, including the people that don't want to do anything about it, know what's going on. I think most Republicans have admitted, and you can look, there's, you know, you can look at different Republicans and people admitting that climate change is actually happening. And I mean, people, I think, are kind of past the phase of needing to know about it, and things have become so bipartisan that it's almost more useful to focus on getting the right people, you know, elected, and literally, you know, going volunteering in your area and offering relief to, you know, people in places that are already experiencing the negative impact of climate change, you know? So I kind of feel like I don't really know if the influencer thing is really working. I think it's going to take a lot of more hands-on approaches, you know.
You've spoken in past interviews about how your faith in your childhood, or losing your faith perhaps, has also shaped your relationship with art making. Could you possibly tell us a little bit about that?
You know, I kind of had epiphanies around the time that I went through puberty that I couldn't believe in the dogmatic Christian God. And part of that epiphany was the homophobia in the church. I just knew from a very young age that just made no sense. So right off the bat, I was like, aren't these people doing us a wonderful favor by not procreating in a world that's overpopulated? So I came to that conclusion as a little nine-year-old, and then the rest was pretty much downhill from there. But I did take away some of the esoteric, you know, the kind of spiritualism, and I got into Eastern philosophy and other things, and kind of incorporated the mythology of Christianity into a newer cosmology that's more like, you know, a hodgepodge of different New Agey things. And I'm still kind of constructing that, and I do kind of use the symbolism from Christianity often because I find it to be useful for me, having been raised that way. But yeah, I think that I might have had some bitterness for a while, but I've really come around, and even to the point where when I'm with my parents, we do get into some heated discussions about politics, but I will never try to theologically, or like, I don't know if that's the right word, but I will never try to argue with them about their faith or convince them otherwise. And I'd like them to have their salvation. And I kind of feel that way about most Christians. Like, it's not my place to try to convince them otherwise. But yeah, I'm kind of coming to terms with it.
I feel like you have a track on this album called Something to Believe, and it might not necessarily be talking about faith necessarily, but I think all these things we've been touching on about, you know, films maybe giving you this kind of sense of purpose, whether that's fruitful or not, and also just this kind of idea of collective activism. Do you think that it's kind of a natural human impulse, I guess, to want to be part of a group or to want to be working towards something?
Yeah, no, I think human beings are tribal. I think biologically we're kind of built to communicate and be with one another. I mean, if you don't, you die, you know. It's been scientifically proven that we need each other. So obviously having like a similar horizon of significance where we all kind of agree about what is meaningful about life, you know, and I think right now humanism and liberalism are kind of the mask of what everybody's supposed to believe, but I think that there's a lot of people that might believe in something a lot less humanist, you know?
Mm.
I feel like it's important for there to be kind of like a third presence, you know, besides you and another person that you guys can kind of, yeah, like relate on. And that's kind of been the story of civilization since the dawn of man. So, yeah, I think that Something to Believe for me is really about, as somebody who has had a lot of beliefs, from Christianity to Eastern philosophy to other New Age mumbo jumbo, as I like to call it, it becomes difficult to latch on to something. And we do live in a very disposable society where ideas are generated and defeated all in one day via the internet, where the feed, the concept of the stream, like everything has just kind of become in flux and constantly accelerating and moving. So it is difficult to kind of latch on to ideas and really hold on to them. And I think that is like a great challenge of, you know, future generations, is finding, you know, universal truths and meaning that might transcend some of the kind of capitalist tendencies. Like, I think we all can agree that, like, certain things will make more money, but that's not really what I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Natalie. Thank you so much for making the time. We can't wait to see you in New Zealand again. It's been a few years since your last album and your last time here, in a bigger stage this time, which is very exciting. Are you looking forward to performing alongside Aldous Harding and Purple Pilgrims?
Yes. I've seen them both over the years, and I just think it's going to be a super bill. It'll be really fun.
That's going to be such a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for chatting to me, and have a lovely day.
Thanks for having me. Much more than ever before, burning down the door. It's a wild time to be
alone. That was Wise Blood speaking to me on Tuesday of this week, all the way from LA. Natalie Mooring is her name. Very, very grateful to her for taking the time to have a chat about her wonderful album, Titanic Rising, that came out in April of last year. And such a beautiful record with a lot of really interesting politics at its heart. And you can catch her playing alongside Aldous Harding and Purple Pilgrims as part of the Auckland Arts Festival in March. You can get tickets through the Auckland Arts Festival website. I'll certainly see you there.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.